So the topic then last week was primarily once one chacham paskins that something is usher, so you're not allowed to go ask another chacham for them to paskin that it's mutter. And we still have a focus as to what the reason why is. Is it because of the kavod of the first chacham? If you go to a second chacham and they reverse the psak, it's a dishonor to the first chacham. Or is it because once the first chacham paskins on it, that gives it a specific status? It now has an usher status, and that can't be reversed. Similar to when a person says that something's usher for themselves, we say shav yanav shei chaticha di sura. So here we would say that the chacham, you know, established this chaticha, you know, let's say this piece of meat or whatever is under discussion as something which is usher. So those are the two reasons, and they were nafkaminas. If the first rav allows the second rav to paskin on it, so then it's not a problem for the first rav's kavod, but it would still be a problem if the first, if originally there was already a status, you know, placed on the object, making the object usher. Or let's say b'di'evet, if a person already asked the other rav for a psak, and the second rav paskin that it's mutter, so b'di'evet, can you rely on that second psak? So if it's just a question of kavod ha-chacham, so then, yeah, they shouldn't have asked the second rav, but once they did, they can rely on the second rav's psak. But if it's an issue that the first rav, you know, made the piece of meat usher, the status is now is that it's usher, so then even if they asked the second rav and he said that it's mutter, it's still going to be usher b'di'evet, so there were nafkaminas. And then there were three more exceptions to this rule that we didn't get to last time, so we'll pick up with that now. So the shach says here in source 1, Chacham she'asar v'chulei, ein chaveiro v'chulei, hainuk she'kvar chala hora aso. So that's only once his psak has already taken effect, once the first rav's psak has taken effect. Avarim shneyem beveis ha-medrash, if they're both in the base medrash, and someone asked one rav in the base medrash, and he said aser, and then he asked the second rav in the base medrash, and the second one says mutter, yachol lahatir, he's allowed to do that. Kenekasu ha-poskim shavi l'kaman, fine, so he's going to bring poskim, which say that that's mutter, because the psak hasn't really taken effect yet. So I thought that seems to be more in line with the idea that the chacham, you know, creates a new status of it being aser. Because if it's an issue of the kavod of the first chacham, so once he said his opinion, to then go to someone else and have the opinion reversed, I would think would still be a dishonor to the first chacham. I hear how you could disagree with that and say that it's only a dishonor once, you know, the psak has been, you know, established and the person already walked out, and, you know, then it's entirely reversed after it's already been, you know, conclusively finished. You know, maybe then it's only then it's a dishonor, but in this case it's not as much of a dishonor, but it would seem to me that it would be a dishonor in any case. Once he said his opinion, you go ask someone else with a different opinion, that's already a dishonor. But if it's a question of, you know, conferring a status onto the piece of meat, so then perhaps it's not, that only happens once the story's finished. If you're still going around asking people, so then the story's not finished yet. So perhaps that would be, perhaps this would also be a nafkamina. Another nafkamina is this next shach here. It's the next sifkatan even. First one was sifkatan nun beis, this is sifkatan nun gimel. So the shach says, ein chaveiro b'chulei, afilu hu gadol mimenu b'chachmo v'minyan. Even if the second rav is a much bigger talmud chacham, and b'minyan usually means he has more talmidim, his school is a bigger school, but so even if the second rav is a bigger talmud chacham, he's still not allowed to reverse the psak of the first rav. King Kosev Aran, so that's the Ran's opinion. Parakamad avodas kochavim b'shem arayvid v'chein Kosev Arivash. Mekosev b'sefer. So it's not Magen Mishnah because the source here is a daf. I'm not sure who it is. Shekei nira das harav. Aval midivrei maharik shoresh kufayin aref nirsha sover b'pshitos didavka chaveiro amru, that the maharik holds that it's only his friend who is his equivalent is not allowed to who's not allowed to reverse the psak. Aval koshu eno chaveiro shu gadol mimenu rashai rahat yirma she'asar harishon, but if he's greater than the first rav, then he is allowed to reverse the psak. So all we've seen so far is two more limitations to this rule of once one chacham paskin that it's aser, so the second chacham can't paskin that it's mutter. So the first shach that we saw here says that that's only if the psak already took effect. But if the person just goes around in the base medrash and asks one rav and then asks the second rav and then asks the third rav in the base medrash, since the psak hasn't taken effect yet, that would be okay. And then this shach brings down a machokas between the Ran on one end and the Maharik on the other hand. If the second Rav is a bigger Talmud Chacham, is he allowed to reverse the psak of the first Rav, like a Supreme Court, I guess, type thing? So the Ran says the second Rav cannot reverse the Psak, even if he's a bigger Talmud Chacham. And the Ma'arik says that the Lashon of the Gemara is Ein Chaveiro Rashai Rahatir. And his friend is not allowed to go ahead and say that it's Mutter. So the implication is that if the second Rav is a bigger Talmud Chacham, then he would be allowed to say that it's Mutter. And then the third exception that we didn't see last time is the Pisklei Tshuva here, that the Ma'asa Acher. In this case itself, a second Rav can't give a different Psak. But let's say a new case arises, and then the person goes ahead and asks the other Rav in the second case. So then even if the cases are identical, and the halacha should be identical, the second Rav can reverse the Psak with regard to a different case. The only question is, what's considered to be a different case? So the Pisklei Tshuva says here in Source 3, if someone actually goes over to the second Chacham and asks him about the second case, then he's allowed to pask him, you know, how he thinks the Psak should be. But not just to jump up and say that, if another case arises, I'm totally going to disagree. Like, that wouldn't be okay. So I think that also could tie together to our machokes as to what the reason is. Because again, the two possible reasons for why the second Chacham can't be Matir is either because of the kavod of the first Rav, or because of the status that the first Rav already conferred upon the abject. That once the first Rav says it's Usser, now it has a status of being Usser. So let's say, so in a case where it's a totally new case and someone asks the second Chacham, so that would be fine for both reasons. But let's say the first Chacham paskened on the first case, and then the second Chacham jumps up and says, well, if this case, a similar case, ever arises again, I would say that it's Mutter. So if the problem is because of the kavod of the first Chacham, so I would think that's still a problem. It's still, offering a different opinion right in the context of the discussion of the first case, so I would think that's still a dishonor to the first Chacham. But if it's a question about, the first Chacham already set as halachic status in Isser on, the object of the first question, so if the second Chacham jumps up and says, well, if this ever happens again, I'm going to say that it's Mutter, so that's not violating the status of the object that the first Rav paskened on, because he's talking about a future case. So I think that could also be an nafka mina.
If you look at 1 and 2, Okay, going back to those, it looks like both come into play. Like, you're saying two possibilities, but his first looks like he's talking about the concept of if there is a part Iser to it. So in other words, if halacha did not take place, you can ask a second opinion. And in the second, he's talking about more of the kavod. In other words, if a rabbi is greater than him, then it's not insulting to his kavod if that rabbi gives a second opinion. But if it's chaveiro, which I'm assuming is an equal, mm-hmm. it would be insulting, and an equal cannot reverse him. So it looks like he's saying both come into play at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
You're not.
Which does the Shaf himself side with either one of the two positions that he quotes here in Source 2?
That I am not sure. He's quoting it. I assume right. He was quoting it for a reason.
Right, yeah. I wasn't sure when I read it which side, like if I wanted to paskin based on the Shaf, who would I paskin like? I guess he does have more, he quotes more Rishonim in line with the first opinion. That if the first, that it would still be Aser, even if the second Rav is a Godel Mimenu B'Chachma. But it could be he holds like the second. Oh, right, the second one is the Ran. The first one is the Ran in the name of the Ravid. That's true. Okay, so I'm not sure. So you want to say he holds himself like the second opinion?
No, I'm saying he holds both at the same time. Because based on the first, he holds the concept that there is a part Easter to it, and the second he holds there still the issue of kavod, so that they're not two independent ideas, but mm-hmm. they both come into play.
I hear that.
But he has a third reason also. Mida Gatalia Beswara, right? The reason why he's got on the chaver, Yachal Adim Ma Shasir Chavera, Apilah Mida Gatalia Beswara, right?
So I think he says that because if it's not a midi detalya besvara, if it's something that's dependent on just like mishnayos, so then you can always reverse the psak of the first rav if the first rav made a mistake. So the only discussion of reversing the psak is if it's something that's talia b'svara. Yeah. No, so I hear that. The shach, right, the shach in the first shach here seems to be focused on the reason of conferring a status onto the object of question. And in the second shach, at least within the Maharik, he seems to be focusing on the kavod of the chacham. Right. And then I'm just not sure if... I guess there are two ways to take it. You could either take it the way you're taking it, that that he holds that both reasons are relevant reasons, which would make sense, because both reasons make sense. So why wouldn't someone hold the both of them? Or if you wanted to, you could say that the first shach sheds light on the second one, and even though in the second one he doesn't say who he paskins like within this machlokas rishonim, maybe you could say that based on what he says in the first shach, it's clear that he holds like the first opinion in the second shach, and that it would be usher to reverse the psak even if the second chacham is greater. But it would make sense to hold it both reasons, because both reasons make sense. So I hear that. Yeah. Fine. And then
all I'm trying to mention is it gets rid of the nafkaminas. In other words, you had nafkaminas if you hold by one way or the other.
Right.
Based on what he's saying, there are no nafkaminas. There are no nafkaminas. In either case, it would be not permitted.
Within the shach. But yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I hear that. Right. Okay, good. So once we like the shach, so one more shach. So aval source four, aval b'masa acher v'chulei. If it's a totally different case, v'ma chacham harishon asar machmas chomer ogeder usyag. If the first chacham said that it's asar, not because he thought that technically me'ikar hadina was asar, but because he thought it was necessary to be machmir, you know, as a protective fence to make sure that someone doesn't then violate some other prohibition, then ino yachol ahatir afilu b'masa acher. So then even if it's the second chacham wants to be matir in a different case, that would still be usher. Kein kasam marashal shamudas amordechai. So I'm just curious how far that would go. Meaning like one chacham gets asked a question and he says, technically may ikar hadin, this should be mutter, but I'm going to make a decree that I'm afraid if you know you do this, then who knows what it's going to lead to. So I make a decree that it's usher. So then a second chacham in a second case is not allowed to reverse that psak. So does that mean that one rabbi now paskins for the entire Jewish world? Like, how does that work? I'm just not sure how
you
far
get that
can
all
go.
The time,
well,
right?
It works. It works the Where? Same way as the other. You know, how do you decide who's gadol? I mean, certain things are clear. If someone is gadol mechavero or b'minyan. I mean, you know, hol in the wall based on manners someplace in the corner of Yerushalayim versus Panavish. I mean, you know, there's no question. Rav Yashiv versus some, you know, pulpit, you know, rabbi. But Rav Shimon and Rav Yashiv. I mean, even Gedolim sometimes is clear, because there are plenty of cases where Rav Ovadia Yosef capitulated to Rav Yashiv. I mean, there are examples where Rav Hutner capitulated to Rav Cutler. Many cases like that. But there are just as many cases where two Gedolim that, you know, who's going to decide.
I guess it's hard to figure out even within who got the government man of Bechachma of a million. So therefore,
What's the case we're talking about here? Because if in the real world, it's all. If you're talking about me going to Rabbi A and saying, you know, is this chicken kosher?
Right.
And he says it's not. They go to the next guy and he says it's kosher. That I sort of get. But like the OU says this is kosher. The Star case says it isn't. Rav Miller doesn't like Rav Price's error. Rav Price likes his error very much.
Right.
Who was the? I haven't noticed that any of these groups have said, "Oh well, we heard that the Star K said this. We're not going to say this." Yo-Yo has his own rules of kashrus. Star K has own rules of kashrus.
Take quinoa as an example.
What's that?
Quinoa.
I was going to mention that.
Using a peasant. Mm-hmm. Well, we've gone the full circle.
That's on a yearly basis.
Well, Rabbi Karopkin. Rav Rock says we could eat quinoa. I remember that. There are other people in the city who say you can't eat quinoa.
But OU backed down. OU at one time said that you cannot eat quinoa. And now they've said that based on the Star K has got that to this quinoa, you can use with the Star K. But I mean, that's...
But there are many others. When Rabbi Kropkin says you can eat quinoa, I remember he got him said it.
He gave a recipe.
There are other rabbis in the city that said you couldn't eat quinoa. So what is it, within the city? And are we talking about individual asking questions about their chicken? Or are we talking about communal matters in general? If one rabbi comes and says this eruv is fine, no other rabbi can come and say it's not a good eruv?
Well, so before getting to this shach, what I thought was that each person asks their own rav, And if someone else has a question, it's like a masa acher. That's what I would have thought.
We have a different person, it's a masa acher? Same Arab. Same with the right can use the way what they have the Shabbos Yom Tov.
Rabbi Taleb used to give different psach halachas depending on who he was giving it to. A lot of it had to do with menhagim. Okay, like the menhagim of Avelut. He would give different psachs. Given, again, it's minhag, it's not psach. Mm-hmm. He would give different rules to different people on how you attend simchas and stuff like that, depending upon who you are. He would give different halachas about how you prepare for Pesach.
Mm-hmm. See, I mean,
so you don't do that based on the individual.
I mean, what are conditions? Because you know, you're talking. There are times when there was a there was a Rav Ha'ir and a Rav Ha'plach, and you know, and then you know, for one to go against the other was just not, you know, not acceptable. And today it's more a free for all.
Right. We have it's like two Bate Dinim in the same city. But I mean, I guess this. The sugya is arising in a case where there are two rabbanim who are present, where the second one could reverse the first one. So I guess the Gemara is talking about a case where I guess that is practical for the second one to reverse the first one. But I hear the question and I hear the suggested answer. I don't know. Meaning, is it called a ma'asa acher if it's a sack that's relevant for the entire community? So if one person asks it, is it then a ma'asa acher if someone else asks it? Do you say that it is because the psak is individualized, which is what you're suggesting, or do you say that it's not because it's the same, you know, objective case? So I hear both options. I don't know.
But this is written a long time ago, in the sense that, for example, the psak on the umbrella was questioned. But because it was written by the guy, why are you laughing? Because I knew you'd bring it up. But because it was written by the gut all of the time, it was accepted, and that's what we live by. Right now, the gutals aren't respected in that sense. So I don't know whether that also affects this.
Mm-hmm. I mean, now there's more possibility that different people would listen to different rabbanim.
Yes, or a different rabbanim won't consider another rabbi as the posek of the door, so to speak.
You know, in the Shach's time, they had a vag that, you know, for all of Poland and Russia, that sat, you know, every so many years and decided on the big questions.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So then you think the Shach is primarily focusing on individual questions that are only relevant to the individual asking?
That's what it says. Yeah, that's what okay. It was.
And the question, when you say Chomer or Geder or Sayeh, are you talking about for that person because I really need to do it, or is he talking in general?
Well, it seems that he's talking in general, because he's saying that then you can't go ahead and reverse the psak even in a masa acher, because the first rav already decreed this geder usiag. But that was, I was having trouble understanding, like,
what's
how far is that going to go? Meaning, once one rav says that you're not allowed to do this because it might lead to that, so then the entire generation is no one's allowed to reverse the psak even in a masa acher. And that could get out of hand. You know, each individual rav decides they're going to create their one individual siag, and then you have 50 million individual siagim from every rav who contributes one of them. You know, so I'm not sure what the limit to that comment of the Shach is. Fine. Anyway, so that was those were the remaining three exceptions to this rule. Once one chacham says it's aser, you're not allowed to have a second chacham come along and say it's mutter. That if the psak didn't take effect yet because everyone's still in the base medrash, then it might be able to be reversed. If the second rav is gadol b'chachma v'minyan, it might be able to be reversed. And the ma'asa acher, it can be reversed. It just depends on what the case is and whether the ma'asa acher already happened or the second rav is just jumping up and saying, if it ever happens again, I'll pass him differently. Fine. Then the next thing I wanted to pick up with was the Gemara in Brachos. Just to review the story. The story was that Chanina ben Achi Rabbi Yoshua went to Chutz La'aretz, and he was deciding on the calendar in Chutz La'aretz. And the Talmidei Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael sent some messengers to him with the hope of getting him to stop doing that, because as long as they're Talmidei Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael, the calendar is supposed to be decided in Eretz Yisrael. So he sent the messengers, and as soon as the messengers got there, Chanina started praising them. These people are such gedolei hadar. And then Chanina started saying, paskening something is aser. And these messengers went ahead and said that it's mutter. So Chanina said, these people, they really, you know, are not such talmidei chachamim. So they told him, it's not going to work. Once you already told all the people that we were gedolei ador, they're not going to listen to you anymore now that you try and put us down. So Chanina said to them, so why are you doing this? Every time I say something's aser, why are you saying that it's mutter? So they said, because we're trying to get you to stop being, you know, mekadesh chadashim and ma'aber shanim and chutz laretz. So that's the story. And then the Gemara asks, how are they allowed to do this? How are they allowed to say, Chanina had already paskin that it's aser, how are they then allowed to say that it's mutter? So, right, the Gemara asks, it's the second line from the end here. So I understand when Chanina said it was tahor and they said it was tameh, they were being more strict. So that's fine. But when Chanina said it's tameh, how could they say that it was tahor? We learned in a braisa that when one chacham says it's tameh, the second ein chaveiro, his friend, is not allowed to say that it's tahor. And asar, if the first chacham says that it's asar, ein chaveiro rashai lahatir. So the Gemara answers, Kasabri kihechi dro nigreru basrei. So they were concerned. They didn't want people to start following Chanina. Chanina was creating a totally different calendar. It's problematic if you have two calendars, and the calendar is supposed to be decided in Eretz Yisrael. And they were afraid that the people would start following, you know, Chanina's calendar. So they, even though we do have this rule, once Chacham says it's Asr, you're not supposed to reverse his Pesach, they decided to do it anyways in the hope of getting Chanina to stop. So that's what the Gemara says. So what we were working on last time is trying to figure out what did these messengers who were paskening that it's mutter, what did they actually believe the halacha was? Did they truly think the halacha was mutter? And the only thing that was stopping them was this principle that once a rav already paskens it's usher, you're not allowed to reverse their psak. But they really thought that it was mutter. And they went ahead and said that it's mutter in violation of this principle of reversing the psak so that people wouldn't follow Chanina's calendar. Or is it that perhaps they really agreed with Chanina that it was aser, and nonetheless they said it was mutter even though that's not what they believed to be halachically the case, but they did that because it was for this all-important purpose of making sure that the calendar, you know, would be unified, and perhaps that would warrant even... You know, that would even warrant, you know, violating the halacha and saying that something is mutter when it's really asr. So those are the two possibilities in the Gemara that we were working on last time. So I think it makes more sense. Well, first we'll see inside. The Yaivitz here answers that question. Here in Surah 6, this is in the Yalkut in the back of my Gemara. I didn't have it on Bar Ilan, so that's why it's a picture. In the Dibra Masul Kihechi Dro Nigreru Basrei. So he says, sometimes Nun Beis, I think, is Nechta Betzido, and sometimes it's Nira Be'enai. I'm not sure how to figure out which one, but either way. Misha Migdar Milsa Hitiru Vihikiru. So in order to Migdar Milsa, in other words, to prevent people following the calendar of Chanina, they were matir and they were lenient. V'samchu Agimarayu, and they relied on what they had learned. Olal Das Atzmam, or on their own opinions. L'hakel V'rachok Alav, to be lenient and to disagree with Chanina. What they would not have been allowed to do, even if they had wanted to be machmir, etc. They didn't say something was mutter if it had already been widely accepted to be usr. So they weren't taking something which was widely accepted to be usr and saying that that's mutter. That they would never do. What they were doing was they were relying on what they had learned or on their own opinions to be lenient and to disagree with Rabbi Chanina, even though it involved reversing a psak, something which is normally aser, even when going to be, even when trying to be mafmir. So my understanding, at least of the Yaivitz, was that they were relying on their own opinion to be lenient, meaning that they thought that the true psak was to be lenient, and they did not think that they were intentionally violating halacha for the sake of maintaining a unified calendar.
Is the word Shepashat Isuro or Shepshat Isuro? And since the Pshat wasn't Isur, then if there was another Svara, or they learned, you know, something else, they could say the other way, just to make, you know, to make the point that they were trying to make. Right. And then,
I hear. I had read it Shepashat Isuro. Its Isur had spread and became widely accepted. Because I'm not a grammarian, so I can't tell you for sure, but I think that otherwise, maybe the word Isura would have come first, something like Masha Isuro Pashut, or mashe pshat hadavar lasor, shepshuto shel davar lasor. I would assume that from the fact that mashe, you know, phrased in this way, that it means pashat isuro, that Isra had been widely accepted. So it seems like he understands that they were passing based on what they believed the halacha was, but not that they were saying that we could intentionally violate halacha for the sake of maintaining the calendar. And I think that makes sense in light of the following Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah, a relatively well-known Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Ma'aseh shebo shnayim, two witnesses came, v'amru re'inu shacharis v'mizrach v'arvis v'ma'arav. We saw the old moon in the morning in the east, and the new moon in the evening in the west. Amr b'yochanan menure edesh shekarheim. They must be lying because there has to be more time in between the disappearance of the old moon and the reappearance of the new moon. When they came to Yavne, Gamliel accepted them as witnesses. Another story. Two witnesses came and said, we saw the moon in its time, meaning the first passable option for Rosh Chodesh. Uvelel Ibur, meaning the previous month at 29 days, and then we saw it on the 30th day. Uvelel Ibur Lo Nireh. And then later that night, the moon wasn't visible. So they had said they saw the moon the night before, and then the next night, the night after the 30th, the moon was no longer, they looked up, they didn't see the moon. The Kibbon and Megamliel nonetheless accepted their Eidos. Amr Ridosa ben Hyrcanus. Ridosa ben Hyrcanus said, Eide Shekerhein, they're lying. Heach mi idim ala isha shayolda, how can you testify that a woman gave birth to a machar kresa ben shineha? And the next day, tomorrow, you see that she's still pregnant. If she's still pregnant, she obviously didn't give birth. If you can't see the moon tonight, obviously they didn't see the new moon last night. I guess it wasn't a cloudy day, so they would have been able to see it. So Amar Rabbi Yoshua, Rela Anias Devarachas. Rabbi Yoshua said he agrees with Rabbi Dosa that it's impossible. The Eidim must have been lying. Shalach Rabbi Gamliel, so Rabbi Gamliel, who had accepted the witnesses, sent a message to Rabbi Yoshua. Gozreini alecha shetavo etzli v'makelcho v'ma'osecha v'yomakipurim shacharios v'chashboncha. So he decreed on Rabbi Yoshua that he come to visit him with his walking stick and with his money on a day that, according to Rabbi Yoshua, was Yom Kippur. So he's asking to walk and to carry money, to do all this on the day that Rabbi Yoshua thinks is Yom Kippur. So halachu mitza'o Rabbi Akiva meitzer. So Rabbi Akiva found Rabbi Yoshua was very sad. So he said to Rabbi Yoshua, trying to console him, Yeshli rumod shekomash asu megamuyel asi. Whatever megamuyel paskind takes effect, shne'emar iremo adei Hashem mikrai kodesh asher tikru osam, bein bezmanam, bein shelo bezmanam, whether the chachamim are right or they're wrong, it doesn't matter. Eli mordos ela'eru. Once they say it's Rosh Chodesh, even if it can't be. And then, the Gemara, the only reason why I brought the next source here is just because it tells us how upset Rabbi Yoshua was. Right, it says Rabbi Akiva saw that Rabbi Yeshua was upset, and he asked him, why are you upset? And Omar Ro, Akiva, Roy Ro Shiipo Ramata Shneimas Archodesh, Val Yigzor Rav Gzeira Zal. I would rather be in Gehenna for 12 months than to have to violate what I think is Mayom Kippur. So, if it's, what I was thinking is that if it's true that having a unified calendar warrants violating the halacha, so then I thought you could ask, why is Rabbi Yoshua so upset? Meaning, the possibility here, that the problem here is that Gamliel is going to have one calendar, and Rabbi Yoshua and Rabbi Dosa, on the other hand, are going to have a different calendar. So that's a big problem. So Rabbi Gamliel, in order to unify the calendar, so everyone should follow the same calendar, he tells Rabbi Yoshua, I want you to follow my calendar, even at the expense of violating the halacha and coming to me on Yom Kippur. And Rabbi Yoshua is so upset, he said, I'd rather be in Gehenna for 12 months than doing that. So if it's okay to violate halacha for the sake of unifying the calendar, so then why is Rabbi Yoshua so upset? So I thought maybe you could answer, he's so upset because it's not just violating the halacha. This is like violating Yom Kippur, you know? That's like a big deal. So maybe that's why he's so upset. So I saw on the Daf HaRadaf here, this is on the Bar Ilan, so it's very helpful, that we're not actually talking here about such a severe isser. What violation of Yom Kippur is going on? So he writes here in Source 9, so the Ma'arik writes in the following case, a Nachri says to a Jew, I want you to, you know, cut down some grain on Shabbos, and feed it to the animals, and he says he's going to do it because he's afraid of what the Nachri is going to do to him if he doesn't. So then, it's only malacha shenatzvich gufa, because he doesn't actually need the grain. He's not trying to harvest the grain in order to feed it to the animals. He's just trying to make sure that the nachri doesn't kill him. And therefore, he's just doing it because he's afraid of the Akum. So it's just the Malach Hashem Atzricha Gufa, it's just the Nisad Rabbanan. Vim Kain, the Klichemda asks, Hafi Nami, Deino Osa Zos, Rak Machmas Gzeiros from Gamliel, if Rabbi Yoshua is only going because of Rabbi Gamliel's decree, have a Malach Hashem Atzricha Gufa. Since it's only Nisad Rabbanan, how come he wasn't consoled by what Rabbi Akiva said? Why is he so upset if it would only be a Nisad Rabbanan anyways? It's not like he's violating Yom Kippur. He's not violating Nisad Arayis on Yom Kippur. It's a Nisad Rabbanan. So why is he so upset? So I thought, if you're going to say that it's okay to violate Halacha to make sure that we have one unified calendar, so then there'd be no way that he would be so upset. And if you argue he would be so upset because it's Yom Kippur, well, it's not Yom Kippur on a Doraisa level, it's just the Malach Hashem Atzricha L'Gufa. So I thought that could at least be a siyua to defend this idea that we wouldn't violate Ahlocha for the sake of, you know, making sure that we have a unified calendar.
That's not the pashtus, right? It doesn't feel like that at all.
What do you mean?
That Rosh Hashanah accepted his din, and there might be, you know, ways of interpreting it, but point fact is, you know, it might be historical, more of a historical analysis in terms of the fight between Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Gamliel, which in the end Rabbi Gamliel lost, right? In terms of you know, there's many, you know, we know there's...
And they had a few altercations.
A few altercations, and eventually Rabbi Gamliel was put down because of the lesser, what did we learn? So maybe there's much more to it than just a Rabbanan, right? And whether it's a halakhic thing or whether it's a... Maybe it's only an historical thing that we're really talking about. That's why he was
I hear that. That's an interesting point.
What's the Malach Hashem Atzricha who makes it to Rabbanan? He didn't ask him to do anything except for Rabbanan. He said, come to me with Malkelcha v'Motecha. That's not his
Rabbanan. Mukt says Nisad Rabbanan. I was assuming it also involved Hotza'a, Mirishas Mirishas, but I hear. You're saying it's Rabbanan from the start.
But it's also symbolic, right? I mean, you know, it's a symbolic act.
So you're saying he emotionally felt bad here that this Rabbi Gamliel, who's been bullying him from day one, is trying to bully him again, and that's why he's upset.
Yeah,
he's not trying. He's accomplishing it.
He did upset.
Right.
And then, you know, which had all kinds of ramifications later on.
Right, I hear. I mean, the Kli Chemda certainly thought that Rabbi Gamliel was whether Yeshua was upset for halachic reasons. I guess this becomes part of a broader question. You know, I thought we were going to wait till the end to get into controversial things. We can get into controversial things now already.
Okay.
To what extent do we attribute the types of things that, you know, I would feel to someone like Rabbi Yoshua? I mean, obviously he was human. No one's suggesting he's angelic, but he also is someone who's much greater than me. So I guess to what extent would he be very upset by something like this? We do know that he was very humble because when Rabbi Gamliel was, you know, was removed from the office. Right, and they eventually needed to find someone to go tell Rabbi Gamliel that he was going to be partially reinstored. I think that they said that you need to get Rabbi Yoshua's permission first, and he was very forgiving, if I remember correctly. So he was very forgiving in the end. I don't know how exactly humble was he, and you know, things that would affect you know, my emotional state. To what degree would they affect Rabbi Yoshua's emotional state? I don't know. I don't know if anyone could possibly know that, but I hear the suggestion. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, even from Rabbi Gamliel's side, you know, Rabbi Gamliel is a gadol. Is he going to tell another gadol, well, you feel that way, I'm ordering you to eat a cheeseburger on Yom Kippur. You know, sometimes that's Kares and many other, along with any other Easter. He's not going to say that, but he is going to say something that's really, you know, blatant and,
Right.
Yeah.
I don't understand this whole thing, because we're here at Akum, is from Malach Hashem Atzricha L'Gufa.
That's what he's the Ma'arik is claiming.
I understand what he's trying, what he's getting at, but that our concept of Malach Hashem Atzricha L'Gufa.
Well, he's not cutting the grain for the sake of the animal. He's cutting the grain so that the
He's cutting the grain for the sake of the animal because, like I said, cut the grain to feed the animal. Mm-hmm. So now, what his motivation is doesn't change what the Malach is.
Interesting. How deep do we go into what he wants? How do we define tzricha?
Yeah, it was defined by you're doing such and such. It creates a malacha, but you know, but that's not really what you're doing. Here is what else is he doing except cutting the grain and giving to the person?
I hear that. Right, the Ma'arik. You're pointing out the Ma'arik is defining when we say tzricha l'gufa. are you doing it for this purpose? How deep do we need to dig to figure out what the purpose you're doing it for? I'm doing it for the animals, but I'm doing it for the animals so that the Nachri won't, you know, won't kill me. So how many steps do we look back? I hear, I mean, we see what the Maverick says, but I don't know if everyone would agree to that. I do hear how you could make that distinction. Yeah.
I mean, it's pekuach nefesh.
That's what I didn't understand. Yeah, so shouldn't that be overriding everything?
So, but I'm thinking that's what he's saying. It's something that he doesn't need. In other words, he would prefer not to cut the grain and right. feed the animal. So it's not something he wants to do. He's doing a pekuach nefesh. The malacha itself is just a way for him to live, to survive.
So I just make this thing as okay. So basically, pekuach nefesh was a monetary thing. If he wouldn't have done it, he would have confiscated his land.
That's
what I
said.
Another possibility. I don't know.
That's a cocktail. Yeah.
It says cocktail.
I thought that meant cutting down the tree. What's that?
I thought the cocktail was not there.
Yeah,
I thought the amago katilna means I'm going to do it. That's what I thought. I didn't look up the Gemara inside, but I thought he meant I'm going to cut down the asfasta, the grain. But,
cut to the substance. Cut down the grain as well.
Right, and then Va'amar lo katilna. I mean, he was definitely afraid of the Nachri, because he goes on to say, you know, Usarak machmas yiras akum. He doesn't say whether or not it's pikuach nefesh. Another possibility could be, if the Nachri, it might depend who owns the animal, meaning if it's the Nachri's animal, and he wants the Jew to do it just for his own benefit, that's one thing, then, you know, you wouldn't have to violate, you know, you would be allowed to violate Shabbos, you know, to save your life. But if the Nachri is asking him to do it to feed the Jew's animal, and the only reason why he's doing it is because he wants the Jew to violate the halacha, so then it could be that you'd have to give up your life if he's specifically telling you that he wants you to do it to violate the halacha, similar to a Shas HaShmad. Meaning the Shas HaShmad have to be that it's a, you know, communal decree against the entire Jewish community, or even if it's just the Nachri specifically wants the Jew to do it, to violate the halacha, that might have the same din of a Shas HaShmad. I don't know how we paskin in that, but I know that there is such an opinion. So it could be that's why it's not just mutter off the bat anyways.
Let's say my wife said to me, I want you to write me out a check on Shabbos.
Okay.
So I wrote out the check on Shabbos. I didn't really want to write the check. I didn't want to upset my wife.
I hear you're saying if you take it to the extreme, they call that ad absurdum, that's what they call it. Yeah. I hear. If you take it to the extreme, it doesn't make sense. Can you get out of every yisur d'oraisa by saying that?
The boss says to you, I want you to drop the contract on Shabbos. So I'm not doing because I want to drop the contract on Shabbos. I prefer to do it on Sunday. But the boss says we don't have it by 5 o'clock in the afternoon, so I'm scared of my boss.
I hear that.
The Jews, okay. Gentiles said to a certain Jew, cut grass on Shabbat, throw it before the cattle, and if you do not, I will kill you. You should not cut. But if the Gentile said to him, cut the grass and throw it into the river, he should be killed and not cut it. What is the reason? Because it's clear that the Gentile is not seeking his own personal pleasure, he rather wants to force the Jew to violate his religion.
Like a Shas HaShmad.
Right. Yeah. Sephariah. It's the best thing in the world.
Yeah.
It's good.
Do you have it? Sephariah,
Bar Ilan.
That you can get anyone who has Google.
It wouldn't be Shas HaShmad, the distinction. The distinction would be between Lahanaso and Lahaviro Al Das.
And Lahaviro Al Das, right? But I'm just assuming
Lahaviro Al Das.
I think there's a discussion as to whether Shas HaShmad is only when it's communal. Or any time we have your all also has the same. I mean, I guess you could ask if there's a difference in lamdas. Is there a difference in lamdas between Shas HaShmad that applies to the whole community, or have your all also that just applies to an individual? But I'm just assuming that the two are interchangeable. I'm not sure.
That's what the whole
sugya
is about: nuance and heterism. Whether and stuff like that, and Shas HaShmad, and whether it's done for pleasure or what's done for. Mm-hmm. As you said, you know, if it's done for religious reasons, it's worse than if it's just that thing just floating around.
Right. So maybe from context there, it's also clear. Yeah. Fine. So the last piece, just to go quickly, so we can get to our controversial last paragraph, as promised. So without reading it all inside, the famous story in Bava Kamma, the Romans send two officers to the Jews, tell us, teach us your Torah, and the Jews teach them the entire Torah, and at the end they say, your entire Torah is great, it's amazing, there's just one thing that, you know, that we don't really understand so much, and that's if the axe of a Jew gores the axe of a Canaanite, so he's totally potter. If the axe of a Canaanite gores the axe of a Jew, so he always has to pay Nezek Shalim. So it's not fair. So they said, but don't worry, we're not going to tell the government. So that's the Gemara. So Tosfos asks, what are you talking about? How was it mutter to teach Torah to an Oved Kochavim? Right? We know that you're not allowed to teach Torah to an Oved Kochavim. So Tosfos answers, they were afraid they would lose their lives, you know, if they didn't teach them, right? He says here in Source 11, Deval Korchachos, who did it against their will, Alpi Divrei HaMoshel, because the king said so. V'chonis Chai V'chim Soratzman, they were not required to give up their life. So the Yamshel Shlomo says, one second, so they felt that if they wouldn't teach Torah to these people, they would be in danger, right? That's why they taught them. And nonetheless, they went ahead and taught them that if we damage you, we're potter, and if you damage us, you have to pay the full amount. Like, if they thought not teaching was going to get them in trouble, like, isn't this going to make it 10 times worse? So what's going on here? So the Yamshel Shlomo says, you see from here that what he calls Ziyuf HaTorah, that to forge the Torah, to misrepresent the halachos of the Torah, is yehoreg val yavor. You have to give up your life rather than misrepresenting the halachos of the Torah. There's a Tosfos in Sota on the Gemara, which says that it's better for a person to give up their life than to embarrass someone else in public, right? Tamar said didn't identify Yehuda, because she figured if Yehuda confesses, great, and if not, you know, I would rather be thrown into the fire than embarrass him in public. So Tosfos asks, well, if that's true, that a person is better off, you know, giving up their life rather than embarrassing someone in public, so then why isn't embarrassing someone in public on the list of the three mitzvot of Yehoreg Val Yavor? It should say, Avodah Zarah Gil Yarayah Shvichas Damim Umar Ben Pnei Chaveiro Barabim. Why isn't Malbim Pnei Chaveiro Barabim on the list? So Tosfos answers that really it should be on the list. It's just it's not Mefurish Batorah. Here Tosfos says at the end of Source 13 here, Mishum Daveiros Albanas Panim Eina Mefurashas Batorah. The list of Gilei Arayos, Shvichas Damim, and Avodah Zarah is only things which are written explicitly in the Torah. But not to embarrass one's friend in public is not written explicitly in the Torah, that's why it's not on the list. But really, you do have to give up your life rather than embarrassing someone in public. So perhaps you could use the same thing to explain the Yamshel Shlomo, even though the list doesn't include misrepresenting the Torah. That's because it doesn't say anywhere in the Torah, don't misrepresent me. So since it's not explicitly written, that's why it's not included in the list. But maybe it really is Yehoreg Val Yavor. because misrepresenting the Torah might be Yehoreg Val Yavor, that's just another reason why I thought it would be difficult to argue that these two messengers who came to Hanina, who is, you know, Makadesh Chadashim Ma'av Rishonim, it's difficult to say that they intentionally, you know, misrepresented what the Psak should be, because they wanted to make sure they had a unified calendar, that everyone's following the same calendar. Because if that's something, if misrepresenting the Torah is something which is Yehoreg Val Yavor, it's hard to imagine that would ever be warranted. Just on the topic of Ziyuf HaTorah, and for the sake of having a fun controversial topic, when do we ever have a practical application of Ziyuf HaTorah? Forging the Torah? We don't usually run into people forging the Torah. So Rav Shechter says the following, and this is a quote from, it's an article in Tchumen by Professor Eliyav Shochetman, I'm not sure who he is, but I certainly know who my Rosh Yeshiva Rav Shechter is. So he says, Keneged kiyumam shel minyanei nashim, women's minyanim, yotza gam harav Tzvi Shechter. So Rav Tzvi Shechter, his Hebrew name is Rav Tzvi Shechter. So he was opposed to women's minyanim. Ve'ira kama min hashikurim ha'hilchatiyim asher machmasam yesh le'asor gada'ato tofa azaw. And he gives a few reasons as to why Rav Shechter says that it's asr. So the second reason why Rav Shechter says that it's asr, as he says, bekama mekomos shenhigu minyanei nashim, in some places where they have minyanei nashim. Now, I guess this is he's very careful with his wording. In some places where they have minyanei nashim, so he's not claiming that you have this everywhere. You probably have some places where you have minyanei nashim where they're not doing the following, but you have some places that have minyanei nashim where they do the following. Kavanasam laharos lakol sh'af anashim chashuvos hein kamo anashim, that their intent in some places is to show that women are just like men. V'yachovos litztarif l'minyan, and they can be counted towards a minyan. They're having their own minyan to show that women are just like men and can, you know, have their own minyan, can be counted towards their own minyan. And he says, and we know, of course, that women cannot be counted. You need 10 men to have a minion. And so, I'm a shaker bin yonei Torah v'mezid uv'miskavin u'mezayif as dinei ha-Torah. I'm not going to translate this. I could post it later. I'm a shaker bin yonei Torah v'mezid uv'miskavin u'mezayif as dinei ha-Torah nechshav kekofer ba-Torah. V'rachein rahanig min hogim sheko'eru ba'ofen shal kviyus aharos ki'iru dinahu shebe'emes eser noshim yechoros litztarei v'chodover shebekdusha. In the Aramasa shall Ziyuf HaTorah, the Isra Chomer Yesh Bazeh.